Welcome back, everyone, for another deep dive. We're going headfirst into a case today that really built the foundation for how we think about courts. Claflin v. Houseman.
Oh, yeah, this one's a classic.
Definitely. And whether you've already come across Claflin or it's totally new for you, stick with us because we're going to look at this 1876 decision with fresh eyes and see how it still shapes the way state and federal courts work together. Imagine, it's just after the Civil War.
Huge changes happening.
Exactly. The economy is a mess, and Congress is trying to fix things with the Bankruptcy Act of 1867. So now picture this. You're a creditor, finally getting what you're owed, and boom, bankruptcy proceedings turn everything upside down. That's where Claflin v. Houseman starts.
You really set the scene there, and it highlights how this case asks some fundamental questions about our court system, how state and federal powers work, where they overlap, where they clash.
Right. And to understand the clash, we're going to break down the showdown a little bit. So we've got Julius Houseman, basically a debt collector appointed by the court for a bankruptcy case. And he's suing Horace Claflin in a New York state court. Houseman says Claflin got special treatment, payments he shouldn't have, before the whole bankruptcy thing happened. But then Claflin throws a huge counterpunch. He says state courts have zero power, no jurisdiction at all, to deal with issues that are under federal bankruptcy law.
And as you can guess, this battle between these legal giants didn't end there. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. What makes Claflin v. Houseman so important, even today, is that it's not just some obscure fight about bankruptcy. This case gets to the heart of our dual court system, how state and federal authority play together. It's relevant to almost every area of law.
Okay, so let's imagine we're the judges here, big robes and everything. Where would you draw the line? Who gets to decide, state court or federal court?
That's the question, isn't it? And Justice Bradley, when he wrote the Supreme Court's opinion, gives us an answer that's both brilliant and kind of poetic. He basically says state courts aren't off in their own world. They're part of the big picture, the whole American judicial system, and they're absolutely required to uphold federal laws, even when it comes to bankruptcy. And Bradley really emphasizes that the U.S. and its states aren't enemies. They share power. But when push comes to shove, the federal power is higher.
So it's not that state courts are less important, but that they operate within this larger system of federal law.
That's it. And this is where it gets interesting for lawyers today. The key from Claflin is that state courts can handle federal bankruptcy cases unless Congress specifically says, nope, federal court only. And in Claflin, Congress hadn't done that.
So basically, lawyers have to be detectives. Got to look the exact words of the law, the statute, to figure out which court has the power to hear the case.
You got it. It all comes down to how you interpret the statute. The court in Claflin was crystal clear that this decision wasn't some wild new idea. They pointed out that state courts have always dealt with federal claims unless Congress made it super clear that only federal court could touch it.
So Claflin is more like reaffirming something that was already true, not inventing a new rule.
Yeah.
You talked about concurrent sovereignty before, and I got to admit, I'd love to hear more about that. What does that really mean for the balance of power between state and federal courts?
It's a great question. I think the best way to picture it is like a Venn diagram, right? You got your state power circle and your federal power circle, and where they overlap, that's concurrent sovereignty.
I love that. So Claflin v. Houseman helps us see where the edges of that overlap are, at least for bankruptcy cases. But I bet even a huge decision like this doesn't answer every question about how those jurisdictions work together, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what makes legal analysis so cool. It's not about memorizing stuff. It's about taking the big principles from cases like Claflin and figuring out how they work on the new legal puzzles we face.
Okay, so what are some questions that Claflin leaves open? What should our listeners be thinking about as they dig deeper into this topic?
One of the biggies is, did the Supreme Court really define what exactly is a core bankruptcy proceeding? Where's the line between something that has to be in federal court and something that a state court could handle, like the debt lawsuit in Claflin?
That's a good point. If we read Claflin too broadly, it seems like almost any debt issue that comes up in a bankruptcy case could end up in state court.
And that leads to another huge question. How has Claflin been understood and used in cases that came after it? Did its meaning change or evolve over time? These are the questions that keep legal experts up at night.
It sounds like Claflin gave us a guiding principle more than a hard and fast rule.
Exactly. And that's why the historical context of Claflin is so important. It helps us see how the law changes over time, how judges work with these tricky areas, and how the balance between state and federal power is always being adjusted.
It's like trying to navigate a river where the currents are always shifting. You always have to be paying attention to how the landscape changes. Now, thinking about lawyers in practice today, how does Claflin affect the choices they make?
Another great question. Claflin adds a whole new level of strategy for lawyers. Knowing about this case, a smart lawyer might pick a state or federal court on purpose, depending on the facts of their case and what they want to happen.
So it's not just about which court can hear the case, but which one might be better for their client.
You got it. For example, imagine a situation where state law might be better for your client in a bankruptcy-related fight. If the issue isn't totally a core bankruptcy thing, Claflin gives you a way to argue for having the case in state court.
This is where it gets really interesting. It's like legal chess, trying to think ahead of your opponent and setting up your case for the best result.
It definitely is. And this strategic thinking is huge, not just for trial lawyers, but for anyone who writes contracts or gives advice on business deals. Knowing about possible jurisdictional issues later on, especially if bankruptcy might happen, is crucial.
So Claflin, even though it's an older case, has some very real effects today.
No doubt. And it points to a bigger theme we see throughout legal history, this back and forth between state and federal power. Claflin v. Houseman is just one chapter in that story, and understanding this dynamic is super important for any lawyer dealing with the American legal system.
Now, about that back and forth, you mentioned that Justice Bradley really stressed the shared power between the states and the federal government. I'm curious, what were some of the things happening back then that might have shaped this idea of concurrent sovereignty as it appears in Claflin?
Well, remember, Claflin comes right after the Civil War, a time when the balance of power between the states and the federal government was, well, a really sensitive topic. The war had settled whether states could leave the Union, but how far federal power actually reached was still being figured out.
So there was this big focus on defining those boundaries, but also not wanting to give the federal government too much power.
Yeah, exactly. And you see that in Justice Bradley's opinion. He's very careful to say that state courts are important in the whole judicial system. He even uses the phrase concurrent and paramount sovereignty to talk about the relationship between states and the federal government, highlighting that federal power is supreme but not unlimited.
That's fascinating. Like, they were walking a tightrope between unity and independence.
Exactly. They needed a system where federal law was at the top, but where states still had a good amount of self-rule. And Claflin, in a way, represents that compromise. It's like saying state courts can handle federal issues, but they have to do it in a way that agrees with federal law.
So it's about recognizing that both levels of government have their own areas of authority, but they also got to work together, kind of like partners.
That's a great way to put it. And this idea of concurrent sovereignty is still relevant today. Think about all the debates we have now about things like environmental rules, healthcare, even legalizing marijuana. These are all areas where state and federal laws sometimes run into each other, and courts have to sort out those conflicts.
It's amazing how a case from 1876 can still help us understand today's legal battles.
It really is, and I think it shows how powerful legal precedent can be. Claflin v. Houseman might be a historical case, but the principles it laid out, the importance of statutory interpretation, the idea of concurrent sovereignty, the subtle ways state and federal jurisdiction work together, these are all things that still shape how we understand the law.
It's like Justice Bradley planted a seed, and it's grown into this huge tree with branches that reach into every part of law.
I love that. It really emphasizes why it's so important to study legal history. It's not just about memorizing old cases. It's about understanding how legal thinking has changed, the debates and struggles that made our system what it is, and how those historical events still affect the legal world we work in today.
Well said. So, to wrap up our deep dive into Claflin v. Houseman, what's the one big takeaway you hope our listeners will remember?
I think the biggest lesson is this. Don't underestimate the power of a single case to change legal history. Cases like Claflin show us that the law isn't frozen in time. It's a living, changing system that's always being reinterpreted and applied to new situations. And understanding those historical roots, the logic and thinking behind landmark decisions, gives us a deeper understanding of the legal system we work with every day.
I couldn't agree more. Claflin v. Houseman is a perfect example of how one case can have a lasting impact, changing the way we think about the law and handle legal problems even today. So to all our listeners out there, whether you're a seasoned lawyer or just starting your legal journey, I encourage you to keep digging, keep exploring, keep asking those tough questions, because the law is fascinating and it's always changing and there's always more to learn. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, and Claflin gives us some hints about where that dividing line between state and federal power might be. Justice Bradley, in his opinion, talks about how the assignee in bankruptcy Houseman, in our case, gets his power from the Federal Bankruptcy Act. So that suggests that actions taken using that act's authority, well, those could be seen as a core bankruptcy proceeding, and maybe that makes them federal court only.
So if the lawsuit had been specifically about what Houseman did as the assignee, like how he was handling the assets from the bankruptcy, maybe that would have meant only federal court could touch it.
That's a sharp observation. It's like when you're trying to find the exact spot where an earthquake started. The closer you are to the source of the power of the Bankruptcy Act here, the stronger the argument for federal jurisdiction gets. But as you move further away, those tremors, they might be felt in state court too.
I'm starting to see how this whole core bankruptcy proceedings idea can get pretty messy. And you mentioned earlier how Claflin has been interpreted in later cases. Have courts generally stuck to a narrow definition or a broader one of what's a core proceeding?
That's where things get really interesting. See, Claflin didn't lay out a super specific definition of court bankruptcy proceeding, and courts have been wrestling with that ever since. There have been cases where courts took a wider view, letting state courts deal with things that seemed connected to the bankruptcy process, but then other cases drew a much tighter circle around what federal courts could handle.
So it sounds like Claflin gave us more of a guideline than a super strict rule.
Exactly. And that's why knowing the history behind a case like Claflin is so important. It helps us appreciate how the law changes over time, how judges deal with these unclear areas, and how the balance between state and federal power is always being reevaluated.
It's like trying to steer a boat down a river where the current keeps changing. You got to be on your toes and watch for how the riverbanks shift. So, thinking about lawyers practicing today, how does Claflin impact these strategic decisions they make?
That's a fantastic question. Claflin throws in a whole extra layer of complexity and opportunity for lawyers. Knowing about this case, a good lawyer might choose a state or federal court deliberately, depending on the specifics of their case and what they want to achieve.
So it's not just about which court is allowed to hear the case, but which court might be more likely to rule in their client's favor.
You got it. Say, for instance, there's a situation where state law might be better for your client in a dispute related to bankruptcy. If the issue isn't clearly a core bankruptcy matter, Claflin gives you a way to argue for taking the case to state court.
Now, this is where it gets really interesting. It's like they're playing legal chess, trying to predict what their opponent will do, and setting up their case for the best outcome.
It absolutely is. And this kind of thinking ahead is key not just for trial lawyers, but for anyone who writes contracts or advises clients on business deals. Knowing about possible jurisdictional issues down the road, especially if there's a chance of bankruptcy, is really important.
Well, even though Claflin is an older case, it still has very real consequences today.
Absolutely. And it points to a bigger theme we see throughout legal history, this constant tension between state and federal authority. Claflin v. Houseman is just one part of that story. And getting this dynamic is essential for any lawyer navigating the complexities of the American legal system.
Now, talking about that tension, you mentioned earlier that Justice Bradley really emphasized the shared power between states and the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the historical factors that might have shaped this idea of concurrent sovereignty as it appears in Claflin?
Right. We got to remember, Claflin happens right after the Civil War, when the balance of power between the states and the federal government was, you know, a pretty sensitive issue. The war had decided whether states could leave the Union, but how far federal power could go was still up in the air.
So there was this big push to figure out those limits, but also this hesitation about giving the feds too much control.
Exactly. And you can see that reflected in what Justice Bradley wrote. He's really careful to say that state courts are important to the whole judicial system. He even uses this phrase, concurrent and paramount sovereignty, to describe how the states and the federal government relate to each other, emphasizing that, yeah, federal power is the highest, but it's not the only power.
That's really interesting. It's like they were trying to balance unity and independence at the same time.
Exactly. They needed a system where federal law was the top dog, but states could still govern themselves to a large extent. And Claflin, in a way, shows us that compromise. It's like saying, okay, state courts, you can handle federal issues, but you gotta do it in a way that doesn't contradict federal law.
So it's about recognizing that both levels of government have their own turf, but they also have to work together, almost like a team.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And this whole concurrent sovereignty thing is still a big deal today. Think about all the debates we have now about things like environmental regulations, healthcare, even legalizing marijuana. These are all areas where state and federal laws sometimes clash, and courts have to figure out how to deal with those conflicts.
It's pretty wild how a case from 1876 can still help us understand what's happening in the legal world right now.
I know, right? And I think it just goes to show how important legal precedent is. Claflin v. Houseman might be old, but the principles it laid out, things like statutory interpretation, the idea of concurrent sovereignty, the subtle ways state and federal jurisdiction interact, these are all ideas that continue to shape how we understand the law today.
It's like Justice Bradley planted a seed and has grown into this huge tree with branches reaching into every area of law.
I love that analogy. It really highlights why studying legal history is so crucial. It's not just about memorizing old cases. It's about understanding how legal thinking has changed, the debates and struggles that got us to where we are, and how those historical events still impact the legal world we work in today.
That's a great point. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Claflin v. Houseman, what's the one big takeaway you want listeners to walk away with?
I think the most important thing to remember is this. Never underestimate what a single case can do to change legal history. Cases like Claflin remind us that the law isn't set in stone, it's dynamic, it's constantly changing, it's being reinterpreted and applied to new situations all the time. And understanding those historical roots, the logic and reasoning behind these landmark decisions, well, it gives us a much deeper understanding of the legal system we're part of every day.
I completely agree. Claflin v. Houseman's the perfect example of how one case can have ripples that last for centuries, changing how we think about the law and tackle legal problems even today. So to all our listeners out there, new lawyers, experienced lawyers, anyone who's interested, I encourage you to keep digging, keep exploring, keep asking those tough questions. Because the law is a fascinating field, it's always evolving, and there's always something new to learn. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time.